Hello and welcome to Kimmy Goes Episode 448. I'm your host, Mike Evercade Apps. And with me as always,
Fashionably late, David McBurney, Phantom Master.
And amazingly on time for once, your man in Japan, Michael Baker, Gaijin no Guitart.
And Smokin' Joe Gamer will be joining us a little late, but he will be here.
As I said, very bold of him to assume that we would be starting on time when he apologized for being late.
10 minutes late is on time.
Yeah. But when he said starting exactly at 11, I'm like, I'm ready. Where are we?
Listen, I was going to set up and then I had to go to the bathroom immediately at 11, okay?
Okay.
And when you gotta go, you gotta go.
True.
Do we have to talk about that fire miner?
It sounds like we do. Start it up. Let's do this.
There's a new translation patch for some PS1 game called Brightus, but it's machine translated.
Oh, Brightus is... Okay. I'll take... So, machine translation feels more on an AI translation, if that's what you mean. But I will say Brightus, the reason that someone would care is that that was a quintet game. Which means that a machine translation is less than worthless.
Vomit.
Yeah.
But yeah, like Brightus, if it's the game I'm remembering, Quintet / Shade worked on it, and that's the last thing they worked together before splitting apart as a company. Shade would go on to produce Orphan Scion of Sorcery.
Okay.
What's that?
One of the Sword World spinoffs?
I don't know if Orphan, like Sorceress Stabber Orphan, is a spinoff of that, or if it's that's. I know of it as a light novel series. I don't know if the light novel series is adjacent.
Brightus. Okay.
Yeah, Brightus.
Yep. And yeah, not the last game that they made, but the last one anyone really cared about, I suppose.
Yeah, like I said, Quintet and Shade split. After Brightus, and Shade went on to make the awful PS2 launch game Orphan Scion of Sorcery. And then a bunch of other deeply shameful projects. But yeah, Brightus is the last thing where you could probably see some Quintet DNA in there, like post Grandstream Saga, which clearly started out in the same vein as Terranigma.
I will say that the last game on their Wikipedia page, Magical Hoshin, even though it was very much an adapted property game, I could tell without checking the credits who had made this game. just the way the sprites worked, the way a lot of stuff worked together in the game's visual presentation was very similar to their Heaven and Earth series. So, yeah. There is that much, but... Okay, and as for machine translation, a lot of it, I think, is going to depend on how much text this thing had to begin with, because it's not necessarily a given with this developer, because sometimes they have really wordy stuff that is highly highly wordplay dense, and sometimes they don't.
Brightus was some flavor of action RPG, from what I recall when I looked it up.
Yep. So, I mean, when we say machine translation, we're like talking like Google Translate of 10 to 15 years ago, quite often, which is not necessarily bad. It's just going to be kind of dry and basic.
There's going to be some ungrammatical stuff going on there, but you can kind of get with.
Possibly. I mean, I said maybe 10 years ago, because that's about the time where Google Translate stopped automatically putting it as the subject for any sentence in Japanese that didn't have an obvious subject to begin with. Yeah. And honestly, with a bit of editorial oversight, it wouldn't be that bad. If it's like ChatGPT translated, then it's more likely to have creative alterations that are not intended, and less likely to have oversight over the finished product, because somebody's going to be trusting it a lot more.
Yeah, like the issue you'll get with like quote unquote AI translations is that they will make some guesses in ways that like make some sense from a human, but the machine does not know, like doesn't have reasoning intent going on, so it's more likely to just go off.
Yeah. So, and honestly, for a lot of online translation stuff, as bad or as laughable as they were at times, the old net translation software was still a better output product than ChatGPT. Some of Google stuff has...
It at least wasn't lying to you about what it was doing.
Yeah. I mean, some of the stuff online has been getting demonstrably worse since they tried to put AI into it.
So, yeah, it, no, I've seen some of the stuff.
It depends on the program. It depends on the translation. Like, the standard Chinese machine translation programs were mostly upgraded and replaced prior to the Beijing Olympics as a massive government push to eliminate some of the more egregious errors that kept popping up. Some really fun ones. But yeah, just the fact that it was machine translated is like, okay, I don't have high hopes for it, but it's not the worst thing on the planet. I just wish that somebody had actually bothered to put the full effort in.
Yeah, I would love for Brightest to get a proper translation. Like, just because it is one of those games that's, like, one of the last, like, original properties from, like, a very, like, storied developer. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it's... I don't expect that to happen. Because it's, like, even among retro game nerds, it's pretty obscure.
Yeah, I mean, somehow I had completely forgotten that this game existed. And yeah. I have never seen it in a store. And I'm trying to find some images of it, and not coming up with a lot here. Yeah, this is looking very, very similar to Grandstream Saga.
Yeah, it's clearly made post-Grandstream.
And also very clearly mid-period PlayStation.
Yeah, it's like 98, I think.
Grandstream Saga, 99. That's the one where everyone looks like they have no face, right?
Yeah, no Why one not? Has a face in Grandstream Saga, which would have been fun. Like, I'm sure that the reason they did it was to save on texturing, given that most of the game was seen from the top down. But then for some ungodly reason, the cutscenes will, like... zoom in on people's lack of a face. It's just like, no, you made an artistic decision that fit one aspect of your game design and then completely borked it.
Yep. Still could be worse, because I'm thinking of Atelier Sophie's Windows port, where it would randomly teleport people's eyes onto somebody else's face badly.
Oh, Lord.
And so half the Assassin's Creed Unity were shit. Eyeless puppets.
Ugh.
And the other half had too many eyes because they were apparently wearing them like glasses.
I'm not just remembering a fucking gag from an old episode of Futurama where they're jumping between different like universes and looking for a specific instance of Zoidberg. And it just, like, Fry jumps through a box, jumps into one of the universes, sees, like, a few of the other characters from behind, and says, hey, have you guys seen a couple of Zoidbergs? And then they turn around, and it's the universe is the same, except no one has eyes? And they just say, we didn't see anything, ever. So, but
anyway, for a game that is incredibly niche, unknown, and nobody cared enough about it to translate it prior to this, I'm hoping this at least kicks somebody in the gear to actually do a better translation.
Yeah.
Also noting that human translation can also be pretty wonky, especially when they don't know what they're talking about to begin with. Note, Final Fantasy V's official translation.
The PS1 version.
Yeah. being the first official translation, as opposed to
the Wyburn translation.
Yeah, not just Wyburn, but that was the most egregious of the bestiary.
That one's the funny one.
Yeah.
But yeah, at least, again, usually if it's a human, you can reason why they did it, and that has some value.
Like earlier this year, I was reviewing that one DS game that finally got released in America after 16 years. And I was noting that this had to be an actual human doing the translation, because no machine or AI program would ever mix up tenants and tenets. Every single time in a chapter that used these two, that used the one word instead of the other quite heavily.
Yeah, I saw this, I had the same feeling for different reasons, like only a human could have written this. When I was playing Tenshi no Uta 2 a few months ago, because it had a set of text boxes that it was like, no machine would ever have written like this. More importantly, boss, those order dorks are talking nonsense about using some crazy magic to merge their floating other-dimensional utopia with this world. They've got something really redonkulous in mind now. Something about opening up a demon gate, I think? Dingbat, the demon gate is the doorway to the demon world. The overworld will be run with demons. Run with demons if they open that up. It's like, that is enough weird choice words that a machine would not have picked.
Very much. I'm having to put at the end of blurbs or books I put on Amazon now, it's like, this weirdness is all my own, and I own it. I own up to it.
I did all this by hand.
There's no way an AI would be making some of the linguistic and grammatical choices I have made in this book. Be forewarned.
Be thou warned. I have made sentence and word choices that no robot would ever even count.
I have accidentally stumbled upon alternative past participles I did not exist prior to me making them up and then double-checking.
Here's new grammar.
Oh, I have also invented a few new relative pronouns.
Like that?
Yeah.
The old ones were getting kind of played out.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we needed another good one or two. Yeah.
Okay, next question.
Welcome to the chat.
Or if we want to...
Moncappy.
Cappy?
Moncappy.
Oh, Cappy. Okay. Hey, Cappy.
Do we call him Cappy for short? I was unaware.
I suppose he'll let us know.
I know. I don't think I've ever been in a situation where I could ask him. Yeah.
Super Robot.
No, if that's Ghosh.
Original Generation Gaiden and Shining Hearts, the first PSP Shining game, recently got machine translated too. Gross. Someone took the existing Front Mission 2 text translation you can find on GameFAQs and used machine translation to complete it. Couldn't we
doing this?
Can we just not?
Yeah.
Does anyone consider that? Can we not?
No, we've never considered that. No one has ever considered this.
Consider not being a monster.
I would never.
Alright, let's grab some of the questions we missed from last week.
Yeah, we got a couple.
Oh, God. These are from FireMire. So, do you remember Vista used to have a separate game folder that will display all your games and how well they performed in the PC, or that titles the games for window branding must have been able to be launched from Windows Media Center? To think that Microsoft did those things all the way back, while nowadays people are still complaining about Xbox mode. How Xbox?
I don't think they did it very well.
Right.
Yeah, like at the time, I recall people complaining that even when they did do things in GFW, that it didn't work that well. So, because this is always the thing, is that they'll announce a big initiative and then you look at the stats on paper and it's like, oh, that'll be nice. And then it's like, you actually use it in practice. It's like, well, trying to force developers to standardize in any real fashion would create immense problems for things that already exist. So he didn't. And the initiative ends up dying.
Oh, there weren't that many. Were there a lot of games for Windows? I think I played.
Yeah, how common the branding actually was, because I wasn't playing PC games at the time that much.
I think I played.
Try not to.
Fallout 3 on my Mac through Boot Camp, and that was one of them. But I think the only Why? I don't know, it just seemed right to play the computer version. And then Halo 2 on PC, I think that's about all.
The beloved Gearbox port that was Vista exclusive for Reason?
Oof. Not great. Next question. What do you think about games using actual photos as backgrounds? Some PS1, PS2 Kamen Rider fighting games did it to recreate scenery from the shows. There's also a visual novel called Someone else read this.
Spell that. Just spell it.
Furaiki.
Furaiki.
Thank you.
Furaiki.
Which is about being a reporter traveling across Japan.
I'm looking at the...
Furai means wandering, so that's part of the title of Shirin the Wanderer in Japanese.
Mm.
And then the key, I'm guessing the key mean is the suffix that means like record or chronicle. So basically it's like brain, art, okay. Memoir, a memoir of my travels is one translation there.
So I'm gonna like just to bring up the games for Windows thing to a more more full accounting. Wikipedia lists 251 games released under Games for Windows branding.
Wow.
From 2006 to 2013.
Wow. Okay.
That is a very small number. I'm going to pull up another system that lasted for about 5 years, which is to say 2 years less, that also is known for not having a ton of games. The Nintendo 64 had 388 games in its lifetime. The Games for Windows branding was very hard to get developers on board for. And some of these are doubles. Like, there's things like Microsoft Flight Simulator X, Deluxe Edition, Microsoft Flight Simulator X, Standard Edition. Zoo Tycoon 2, Marine Mania, Zoo Tycoon 2, Zookeeper Collection, Age of Empires 3, Gold Edition, Age of Empires 3, The Asian Dynasties. Like, a lot of cruft padding that list of, like, this is the same game. This is an expansion to the same game.
Yep.
So, yeah, this was just not a very successful initiative, kind of, from Jump Street. Hey, you could play Juiced 2 Hot Import Nights.
Oh, great.
Another Microsoft Flight Simulator X. What the heck are you doing here? God damn it. Yeah, it seems like 07 or 08 was the biggest period for that, and it kind of tapers off. And then, yeah, you can get some weird stuff here. I haven't thought about Sins of a Solar Empire in a long time. It tapers off pretty hard. By 2013, there are like 5 games. The last game released with the games for Windows branding appears to have been something called Armageddon. I've never heard of it. The last game anyone's heard of that seems to have been released with the branding is Dishonored Game of the Year. I do think that there's, like, a certain charm to using real photos as background. It's obviously limited to very specific art styles or and gameplay types. Like, you know, you can't turn a real photo directly into a 3D object, but, like, if you're using, like, a pre-rendered background, that can have a very interesting charm, especially... one of the things that it offers you is the option of, like, weird mixed media backgrounds, where you maybe have a real photo in the background mixed with, like, 3D polygon renders, which can produce very interesting surrealist hellscapes. I'm in favor of 3D graphics looking like surrealist
I mean, of all the things you could do with 3D graphics, why make them look realistic?
They can look so much better than realistic. They can look like I'm going to hell. It's time to play Germs on the PlayStation 1. Seen that? If you haven't, go look it up. It's weird. PS1 open world horror-y thing. I don't know how to describe it. There's no quick way to describe it.
Yeah.
We kind of skipped past. Does anyone want to talk about what they've been playing? I know that Wheels doesn't have much to say for Summer of Falcon, but maybe there's a little.
No, I can talk about my review game because the embargo is
not embargoed anymore.
Yeah, and a lot of people have reviews out there, and that game is Disgaea Mayhem. Hopefully the review will be up within the next few days. But it's basically, hey, what if we had a Disgaea game, and instead of strategic battles, you just have Musou battles replacing them. And it kind of follows the same structure as a Disgaea game beyond that. So you've got, like, the item world and the Dark Assembly, where you can vote on weird features and stuff. And it's got a cheat shop, so you can make the game harder or way easier. And you can already make the game way easier because it's very extremely easy to grind. But it's
pretty is it fun to grind?
It is. It is fun.
Okay,
to
that's the more important thing, because if it's grindy and it's not fun, then no.
No,
that's an empty video game.
Yeah, no. I mean, the combat's very simple, but it's pretty fun. There's different weapons you can choose from, and they all play kind of different. And you can also bring a companion monster into battle with you. And that monster will kind of wander around and attack enemies as well. But also, once they build up power, you can magic change them, which is a system that's been in a few Disgaea games, into a weapon, and essentially have a second type of weapon with you, or I guess if you're boring, have another version of the exact same weapon type. But then those monsters will have different super attacks, and you can kind of try and collect them all if you really want. But I mean, there's ways to overpower them as well. Took me about 8 hours to roll credits on the story. The levels of the enemies jump pretty drastically at times, but it is very easy to grind up. As if you feel like it, it's very, very, very easy to completely overpower yourself to make everything pretty trivial.
I have a real question for you right now.
Well, let me just finish that thought.
Okay.
And if that's boring to you, you can also just open up the cheat shop and make enemies way harder. So there's a lot of customization. Not customization as, hey, let's toggle this to easy or hard, but there is a lot of customization as to...
granular customization.
Yes, granular customization, which may not be immediately clear, but it is there, and you can really make this game as ridiculously easy or as ridiculously hard as you so desire. You have questions?
The real question, is there an item world?
There is an item world.
Okay, so it's an infinite game, got it.
And the item world is much simpler, it's just waves of battle, and you'll level up the item, and then I think you can go into the item again. And there's different events and stuff that happen in the item world. So it is still the item world. But yeah, there's didn't seem to be like new quests or anything in the post game. I think there's some DLC that was not available when I was reviewing, so maybe that'll add a little bit of time. But there is an event you can unlock that costs an absurd amount of mana. And also you have to get the people in there to vote for it. So I don't know what that does. But I mean, overall, I had a blast with my short time with the game. And I will probably go back and play some more. I mean, I feel like it's definitely like... the template where they could make a much deeper and more interesting action RPG than this pretty simple one. But I mean, for like a one-off, if this is just a one-off spin-off, it's pretty darn fun. But full review to come. But that's what I've been playing the past week, other than a few hours of East 10. So we'll talk more about Falcom stuff next week. Mm-hmm. What about you?
Hmm? Me?
Either of you.
Yeah, you.
Well, I'm trying to relocate my laptop to a different position right now, so give me a moment. I mean, generally more of the same over here. Trying to get stuff finished, or in one case, platinumed, just to do it. Now, my bigger thing this week has been questing to find very random, obscure manga that I know are in print, but none of the used bookstores have them. Getting really annoying. Especially since the retail store doesn't have the first volume of the one I actually really want.
Ooh.
Yeah. So. Yeah, that was my morning, just riding around and in the heat and finding various used bookstores. And not finding anything I was looking for.
What?
What have you been playing?
Fluttering between a bunch of things. We'll see if one of them latches on and save it for a week.
Okay. I see. Farmrunner has another comment in here, which is something I wanted to mention. The initial impression of Kyoto and Xanadu seems to be very positive. Quite a few people.
Kyoto.
And Xanadu. Know the story and gameplay beats feel fresh, probably because Falcom made a big deal out of this game being made by their young employees. Interesting. I mean, if anyone that's listened to me talk about Tokyo Xanadu, that game rules. So I'm excited to see what they've done with this one. And by all accounts, seems to be all good impressions. But
I'm very excited for Kyoto Xanadu. Yeah,
no idea. I don't think we've heard anything about when it's going to come to the West. So now we begin the waiting game.
Winning game sucks. Let's play Hungry Hungry Hippos.
Oh, it's a good game. Love me some Hungry Hungry Hippos.
They're in an eating race.
Hungry Hungry Hippos.
I forgot where I was. It was somewhere where there was giant hungry, hungry hippos, and it was amazing. Anyway, what else to say? I previously talked about Castlevania Harmony of Despair having such a wide field of view made it feel different to play than other Castlevania games. I tried Symphony of the Night PC recompilation. Oh. Mm-hmm. At least the screen size...
That's not inherently...
Okay. At least the screen size stays mostly the same since the recompilation is based on the Xbox 360 port. Interesting.
But the problem being that it's based on the Xbox 360 port. I'm assuming. Yeah. So.
I would suspect that a recomp would be based on that.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing to me that that game has not been ported to more platforms than it has at this point. I wonder why.
Sure would be nice. I forgot the Kyoto's had three names now.
What was it before?
It was Heian Kyo.
Oh.
And then for a period it was Saikyo, which was, I guess, Western capital.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, recomps, as long as they're not AI dog shit, are fine. They've been, I saw some people talking about a recomp of Dodonpachi Sai Daijo, which was previously only available at home on the Xbox 360 in Japan. So, you know, consider this a good thing. It's just bad when it's something like, I've vibe-coded a recompilation of Mischief Makers for the N64, and it doesn't run properly at all.
Why'd
you bother? Why'd you bother?
Do you even know what you're doing?
Clearly not. They vibe coded it.
God. Is vibe coded when you ask ChatGPT to do it for you?
Yes, vibe coded is when you ask an AI, how do I do this? And then it spits out some code and you don't know what it does and you just put it in.
Hopefully. Yeah, it's supposed to make it sound nicer and like, oh, I'm just chilling here and doing
it out.
That's what we call a euphemism.
Yeah, it sounds better than I asked the robot and the robot spat shit at me and I just trusted it. Yeah.
Oh,
that's the agony and the ecstasy of the last week.
You can subscribe to the Ask Wheels channel for $4.19 right now. Wow.
Weird number.
You should. You get such benefits as
wheels having your money.
You don't have to watch ads. Oh, 27 cents for tax. Deal off. No.
You can send me money to make so I can make poor decisions spending it on buying bad video games. Or maybe good ones.
I bet somebody's got
to. You won't be able to buy any more Call of Duty Hardened editions, at least.
Oh, fuck that shit. Please contribute to my Evercade fund. Thank you, Daddy.
What do you have in the mail?
What do I have in the mail?
It's got Popful in the mail.
In terms of ordered Evercade cards.
I've gotten all my cards at this point.
Okay. What ones do you have?
I got. Did you get Sunsoft? Sunsoft. Sunsoft.
No.
Is Gimmick on there?
Yes, it is.
Then get that.
I think it was sold out when I was looking at it.
Get it when it comes back. Gimmick is really cool.
Hold on. Fireminers asked, I've never played Monster Hunter Frontier. Has anyone done that? No, because it's probably garbage.
Is that the Xbox 360 online one?
Yep. Probably garbage.
Yeah, the only stories I ever heard about that were that the new weapon they added is completely busted as hell. And that, like, it seemed like it was something that Capcom was very much trying to make happen, and I've never heard a Monster Hunter fan be terribly satisfied with that.
Yeah.
Oof.
But anyway, Evercade. So we got the Tomb Raider games. This one's
six.
No, only 1 through 5. I don't think it can I don't think it can run.
Oh, it can't run PS2 games, so they made a bespoke compilation that only had Last Revelation and Chronicles.
That's right. Those run very nice. You know, I like those games. Yeah. Obviously, people's mileage may vary. There is a cart that's Soul Reaver and the Legacy of Kain, which was one I wanted to get right away because I think there's not a lot of ways to play Legacy of Kain. And
so is it Soul Reaver 1 and Blood Omen 1?
Yes.
Okay, that explains it. Blood Omen 1's a really weird game.
Yeah, it's interesting.
You can play it on PS5 now, actually.
Yeah, fuck that. I'd rather play it on Evercade.
At least I can't take it away from you.
Sony can suck my balls.
Okay. I just thought that for the benefit of the audience, there is a PS5 version of Legacy of Kain Soul Reaver.
I believe it is also on GOG.
Yeah, and it has, but that version, I'm just saying, has save states and rewind and other features like that, if that's something you're interested in. And
you should buy it on GOG or Evercade instead.
The GOG thing, you'll at least have a much better chance of owning in the future.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Let's see what else. And
yeah. So we are, in addition to being physical advocates, we are advocates of, like, more ownable digital.
Yeah.
Yes, that's fine.
I also grabbed 2 indie carts for the Evercade. One is Alwa's Awakening 8-bit edition, which is a game that's
on
other platforms. And also, hold on, let me grab it. What the hell is the other game called on it? I had not heard of it.
Cathedral?
Yes, Cathedral, which is another Metroidvania.
Are you going to get the Boogerman card?
Is there a Boogerman card?
It's in a compilation.
Okay, let's see. And the other one was Roguecraft DX, which is kind of a traditional roguelike, but it's technically an Amiga game.
Amiga?
Yes.
So, Boogerman is a part of Interplay Collection 1.
Okay.
Contains Battle Chess, Boogerman, Clay Fighter, Earthworm Jim, Incantation, and Titan.
Interesting. Do I want to?
And at least it's not the racist. At least it's not the racist Clay Fighter.
You mean 63 1/3?
Yes. Or its updated version, Clay Fighter 63 1/3 Sculptor's Cut.
Oh God.
The racist version.
There's a bunch of racist characters in Clay Fighter 63 1/3.
Okay.
They put in a guy who's a buck-tooth Asian man who has a bowl cut and sort of looks like a racist Clay caricature of Bruce Lee, and all of his moves are named after Americanized Chinese food, and his name is Kung Pao.
Okay.
Yeah, don't like
that's,
that.
There are more racist ones, we'll leave it at that. So don't play Clay Fighter 63 and 3rd. Your life will not be in. No honorable deeds were committed here.
That's it for my Evercade stuff for a while. It should keep me busy. But I did get there's different Evercades you can get. The cheapest one is the one I got, which is the Super Pocket. And all those come with different games built in. Different editions themed around different companies. So I got, being the year of Capcom, I got the Capcom one, which has some version of Street Fighter, Mega Man 1, Strider, 1944 in some of those games, and Final Fight,
cool,
Captain Commando, and I think a few other games built in.
Hmm.
Yeah, those are some classic belt scrollers.
Yeah, but it's a pretty cool little system. I can't complain.
Yeah,
the carts.
It knows what it's meant to be.
Yeah, the carts are like
it's very booty.
$30. When I got a few of them on sale, so they were even less than that. So good fun. Definitely recommend.
I just want to point out there is yet another Capcom sale on Steam right now. So I believe somebody had said he didn't want to pay for PlayStation Plus and wanted to maybe get the PC version of Street Fighter VI. Well, here's your chance, just so you know.
When I get paid again, I'm going to get it. I did see that it was on sale.
Okay.
Did you get the Rare Collection when?
I did not.
Well, that's got a bunch of the games that were on Rare Replay, right?
Yeah, I do. Like
Nightlord?
I do have a pre-order in for the newer handheld Evercade that's coming out later this year, and that comes with a Banjo 1 and 2 cart.
Whoa, what the fuck? No, I'm sorry, I'm just losing my mind that this Conker's Pocket Tales, a game that has not been acknowledged for decades on it.
Yeah, that is on there. That's not in the Rare Replay, is it?
No, it's not. That has not been acknowledged basically ever.
Conker, oh no.
This is Conker before they decided that he was going to be a foul-mouthed little hellion, so they made him just like a cutesy little squirrel man.
Oh, God.
Oh, okay, so.
And he was pretty tame in Diddy Kong Racing as well.
Yeah, because before he was supposed to be in a game called 12 Tales, Conker 64. It was basically just going to be Banjo. Like, initially, Banjo took on the design it did because it was floundering in development. They didn't know what to do with it. They saw the Conker team and it's like, well, that's working out pretty well for them. We'll make that. They made that faster than the Conker team did. So now, Banjo is out and Conker no longer has an identity because it got mugged by fucking Banjo. So it spends several years in development while they try to figure out what the fuck this game is. And then eventually, after it's floundered in development,
the game was actually fuck. Okay.
And then, eventually what happens is one of the Killer Instinct developers basically told, see what you can make out of this within the next year out of whatever we've already made. And so, a bunch of assets get, slightly recolored or redrawn, and, a handful of new things, and the game becomes hyperlinear and develops a sense of humor that's it's 2000 and I'm a British man in my 20s who just watched The Matrix. But yeah, very, very, very strange tale. There's a bunch of footage of it when it was 12 Tales floating around, and you end up seeing oh, that got repurposed into that other thing. That got recolored and was changed to look like shit.
Mm-hmm.
In a technical sense, it was very accomplished, but it did look like literal feces.
I was going to say, I don't know if you guys remember Project Spark for Xbox One.
I do. I remember Conker's Big Reunion.
Yeah, so they brought Conker back for that, and I think I bought that, and it was neat. So I
now
had a whole
it's
bunch
gone.
Of. I did. I had. I'm mad because I think I was playing it when I was studying game design, and I had a whole bunch of projects I was working on. I had this huge open world adventure thing, and then I also was working on almost a Contra style platformer. And the whole thing got shut down. One day you go to sign in, and it won't connect to the server, and it's over. That's it.
Yep, everything was server side. I remember the game design thing does remind me of one of the funniest things I've seen in a while. So I was at a local convention past weekend. One of the things they had on display, they had this little this mini museum of a local dude who had been to a million trade shows and E3s and shit. They had on display all of these old E3 guidebooks, and I saw this incredibly funny this incredibly funny talk that was apparently given at E3 in 2003 on Tuesday, May 13th from 9:30 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. in room 404AB. The design document, necessary evil or not needed. I can tell you, buddy, you need a design document. I feel like that's settled by this point.
Mm-hmm.
But yes. Yeah, very, very funny to see someone try to make an argument that you can just get away without one. I don't know if that talk ever seriously entertained that idea, but it is in the title and it's funny.
Yeah, that is kind of the design philosophy behind vibe coding.
Yeah, a little bit.
When I was one of the classes I was in, we had to write a design document. And yeah, that was like the final project. So one of the assignments was just go on Google, do a search, and find a design document to share and just, you know, read it and just give a summary of it. And me and several other people actually ended up picking the, I think it was Grim Fandango, because that's one of the first
Google results that comes up.
Yeah, and that was readily available. I wrote a design document for a game that would have been like a combination of like Contra and Zelda 2, and maybe someday it'll become a reality. I don't know. But
yeah, go for it, go for it.
It's a dream, yeah.
I also saw this thirdly named thing, which was an Australian computer from the 80s.
What in the world?
Put the image. This is the Dick Smith Wizard.
The what?
The what?
The Dick Smith Wizard.
Dick Smith? Tell me more.
It's the Dick Smith Wizard? Okay, what?
Yeah, so Dick Smith was apparently a, like, Australian, like...
Actual name?
Yeah, like it was like Dick Smith was like an Australian like businessman who owned a chain of electronic stores in the company at the time, and like eventually this retailer died, as all retailers die, by being purchased by private equity and destroyed. But but yeah, like they had taken the, gosh, what is this thing called? The VTech CreativeVision and rebadged it in the way that late 70s, early 80s computers and game consoles often were. But because of that, like, any human being who is not Australian who speaks English looks at that and is like, why the fuck is this thing called the Dick Smith Wizard? Notably, for those looking it up, Wizard is spelled with two Z's for some reason.
Why not?
Huh.
Nobody beats the Wizard.
Yeah. Nobody.
I'm still getting Pinball Wizard parodies running through my head.
It doesn't help that Dick Smith and Pinball are both two syllables.
Exactly. It's a Dick Smith Wizard. Da, da, da. Okay, yeah.
That deaf, dumb, and blind kid sure plays a mean pinball.
Dick Smith. Okay, but here's some of the other things. I'm putting some of the other things I saw in Wheels' Discord so that y'all can enjoy. There's a U-Force here for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
Ever seen the U-Force? Dumbass object.
What the that hell is that?
That is... The U-Force. Like, it looks like it's something that took some peyote and dreamed of being a 3DS like 30 years before the 3DS existed.
The U-Force was like an NES controller where you were supposed to play it by like moving your hands in front of an infrared sensor.
Huh.
So a theremin.
Like a dumber theremin. Doesn't work very well.
I figure.
But yeah, relatively rare nowadays for the obvious reason that no human being would look at that and be like, yeah, that'll work. Yeah. Just wanted to share the spoils of that. There's also some like old E3 manuals there that you can, that I took some pictures of, but yeah. Fun. I just figured that was worth sharing. Might as well. Enjoy the Dick Smith Wizard.
I need to go to more retro expos.
Yeah. I might be going to the Portland Retro Gaming Expo in October. That'll be fun.
Nice.
I still have it stuff.
Maybe I can find an Amiga in one of these things.
Why would you think you couldn't?
Like, considering all the much rarer stuff that he's been showing us, yeah.
So why do you suddenly need an Amiga?
I don't know. I like the Amiga.
Oh, were you a Commodore child? Were you keeping up with the Commodore?
We were Commodore children and then Mac children.
Finds a great deal about your unique psychosis.
I was going to say, I think you can still get the Commodore 64 mini console for under $100.
There was also an Amiga version that, like, actually, like, you know, has a functional keyboard. So you can just have, like, a little emulator box that is just a straight-up Amiga.
Oh my god.
But the other thing I was going to say about this
That is expensive.
Was... Did you ever hear the story about what happened the first time they demoed the Amiga in front of in 1984?
No.
So one of their big ways that they wanted to advertise it was like, this is going to be an artist machine. This is a computer for artists. So they roped Andy Warhol into demoing it. And when they brought the demo unit out, they were like, okay, please don't use the bucket tool. Sometimes it crashes. And so, of course, when he got the demo unit onto stage, the first thing he does is the bucket tool, seemingly trying to get it to crash. And they got very lucky that it happened to not crash that time.
Wow.
But it was a complete coin flip whether it was going to crash.
It's like, yeah, I'm Andy Warhol.
I don't know what you were expecting. There's no universe where you tell someone like Andy Warhol, okay, if you do this on stage, it might crash, and they don't immediately do it. But yeah, that's your bit of Amiga trivia for the night.
Wow.
Are you keeping up with the Commodore?
We also had an Atari computer before the Commodore.
Which one? There were a number that were
I just remember playing Space Quest on it.
Which Space Quest? Do you remember which?
No, I don't.
What? Okay. Do you remember? Did it actually have decent colors, or was everything kind of like early MS Paint?
Don't remember. I just know that we had an Atari. That's it.
It was EGA.
Yeah, it's probably like a 400 or an 800. The very funny, weird thing is that, like, through a circuitous chain of, like, business arrangements, the Atari ST was made primarily by the people who made the Commodore 64, and the Commodore Amiga was, like, partially made by people who had worked on the Atari. Grenade. Jack Tramiel, after being forced out of Commodore, purchased Atari with the twofold goal of making sure that his family would have jobs and money in the future, and to get back at the people who ousted him. And so when he got booted, he poached a bunch of the people that had worked at Commodore on the 64. And so Commodore suddenly needs to... meanwhile, he fired a bunch of people from Atari, and Atari, that's when Atari properly pulls out of consoles for the most part. The 2600, 5200, 7800, those was basically... Cease to be a focus for the company. They end up purchasing rights to a few console designs. The Epix Handy became the Atari Lynx, and the some people who had worked at Sinclair Computing in Britain end up producing the baseline specifications for the Atari Jaguar. But, in-house, the only thing they care about at that point is the computers. Also, can we just think about how, wretched a name the Handy is for your handheld device?
Yeah.
A name that has only gotten worse with more slang connotation.
So, speaking of the Atari and the Lynx, while I was trying to track down the Roguecraft DX Evercade cart.
Oh yeah, you brought this up.
One of the listed vendors in the U.S. was something called Songbird mm-hmm. Productions.
Oh, that is an Atari.
Yeah.
Like they did boutique publishing on like old Atari things. Like I remember when Songbird Productions in like the mid 2000s put out a port for port of Total Carnage to the Jaguar.
Yeah.
Total Carnage being like kind of the spiritual successor to Smash TV.
But I mean, they still seem to be at it. Like I got a flyer for their 2026 releases with
add-ons. I love them.
And it's yeah, I was looking around the site for a second, like, is this legit? And it's like, yes. It's like, what the fuck?
I could have told you that, man. Songbird cool. Songbird isn't like that same insane rarefied group as like Watermelon, although less like openly hostile to all other human beings than Watermelon. You've never seen like Watermelon's like bizarre manifesto that came with Paprium for the Sega Genesis, a video game which took longer to develop than the viable lifespan of the Sega Genesis.
Wow.
Like that game was in development for like 9 years, and it's like, buddy, I don't know how to tell you this, but no, I don't care how impressive it is. I'm unimpressed at spending 9 years developing a Sega Genesis.
That's awful.
But yeah, like that manifesto is utterly deranged. Let's see. Okay, I'm looking at the list of Lynx games that you can purchase for your Evercade. Awesome Golf, Basket Brawl. Oh, Crystal Mines too. Cyber Virus, Dracula the Undead. Gordo 106! Jesus! That game fucking sucks. That game's extremely funny, but it's very bad. Ishido the Way of the Stone, Jimmy Connors Tennis, Loop, Malibu Bikini Bar.
Malibu Bikini Bar?
Bikini Volleyball.
You should look at some of the actual Lynx carts they sell on Songbird, too.
Oh, I should. Graveyard Dog! That game sucks, too. Super Squeak Zump.
I just want Todd's Adventures in Slime World, damn it.
I'm kind of shocked that that's not either of these.
It's in Collection 2, Link's Collection 2.
Oh, it's in Collection 2, that makes sense. Yeah, Blue Lightning is actually really good and impressive. California Games is pretty... is like, not amazing, but it's kind of neat. Checkered Flag is pretty impressive. Chip Challenge is great. Electro Cop is pretty decent.
I was looking at Link's. No, it was some other collection I was looking at on Video Games Plus, and it sold out before I could put it in my cart and check out. I think it might have been the Sunsoft one, actually.
Yeah, the Link's Collection 2 here is actually probably the one to get. Like, that's got a lot of the things that are actually good on the Link's.
I mean, that would be the one I would get just for Todd's Adventures in Slime World, but the other stuff on there looked really good, too.
Blue Lightning's really impressive, because it's kind of like you're playing, you're in the context of playing, like, a 1989 handheld, you're playing something that sort of looks like Afterburner.
Yeah.
You've got Chip Challenge is just, like, an all-time classic little puzzle game. Checkered Flag is a fairly impressive racing game, given the time.
California
Electro
Games
Cop's pretty
is
neat.
Interesting.
Yeah, California Games is interesting and very of the time in a very pleasing fashion.
Yeah.
And Zarlar Mercenary is pretty fun, but that's a really eclectic collection. That is one of the things that I appreciate about the Evercade as a general concept, is that, like, because it is a machine that only exists for absolute sickos and, like, psychopaths. Like, the games that actually get released on it are, and the fact that, like, games that are mainstream are expensive to license. What you end up with is you get a lot of games that are just like, this was cheap to license, and it's completely fucking deranged to imagine someone releasing it on anything other than this.
Yeah. Okay. What is on this Data East collection? Joan Mac 2 Lost in the Tropics.
Oh yes.
Joan Mac 2
owns, actually.
Magical Drop 2, Side Pocket.
Magical Drop 2
Fighter's
is great.
History.
Side Pockets. Fighter's History is not amazing, but it is pretty deep. Yeah. Fighter's History Dynamite is the better one.
Burger Is Fighter's Time. History
the one that did that one Hell completely yeah, rip Time. Off Street Fighter and then get sued?
Yes, they did get sued over Fighter's History, although Capcom ended up losing. Okay. The better one is Fighter's History Dynamite, aka Karnov's Revenge. But yeah, Fighter's History is not.
I've played it.
It's just like nakedly a knockoff. But yeah, like the Data East collection has some pretty good stuff on it. I don't know on that Sunsoft collection. I'm gonna find out that there's Arrow the Acrobat on it and be pissed.
Of course, it is on there. I love that game.
God, that game fucking sucks.
Which game?
Arrow the Acrobat.
Arrow the Acrobat.
Oh.
Well, I think it also has Journey to Silius on it, which is also online. Yeah, it's a great game.
Yeah, that game is a really neat little like sort of contrary thing. Well, there's two soft collections. Let me see what's on both of these. I'm very curious now.
I think the second one has Zero the Kamikaze Squirrel.
Yeah, okay. The second one has Blaster Master Enemy Below, which is the Game Boy Color Blaster Master.
Yeah, the first one has the Game Boy Blaster Master and the original Blaster.
Is that Blaster Master Boy?
Yes.
Yeah.
Also has Gimmick.
Enemy Below is the better of the Game Boy Blaster's Master. Euphoria the Saga, that game's really good. Days Before Christmas is garbage. Arrow the Acrobat 2 is garbage. Zero the Kamikaze Squirrel is actually pretty okay. Pry Pry Primitive Princess, I've never even seen this. Galaxy Fight Universal Warriors, dumb as hell, love that.
Arabian.
See, Dave, it sounds like you're going to end up buying an Evercade, huh?
No, I'm all in on purchasing like films at this moment. Yeah. Check back in a year. But yeah, like I've been filling out my physical film collection.
I just got Mad Max Fury Road and Who Framed Roger Rabbit on Blu-ray today for a total of $15.
Yeah, I've been eyeing the 4K of Who Framed Roger Rabbit. The Criterion Collection has been fucking me over because they've been like on sale all month, and it's just like, well, maybe I do need a copy of Raging Bull.
Are those all like 4K blue? Because I was looking at them Barnes & Noble today, and they weird me out because they're not like in the regular Blu-ray cases, but it says
yeah, they're Blu-ray like Criterion case. Yeah, Criterion cases are always. Yeah, Criterion has their own cases. You can always tell them on a shelf. But they're not all 4K Blu-ray. Like ones that are 4K Blu-ray and Blu-ray combos are slightly more expensive. Like right now on the 50% off sale price, it's $25 versus $20. So, so I picked up a bunch of like, I picked up like Jean-Pierre Melville and Akira Kurosawa films and a little bit of Scorsese. I've been classing up the joint.
Nice.
Listen, the people need to, like, the people, and by the people I mean me, need to know about Le Samurai and Army of Shadows and fucking High and Low. So in case you're wondering what I...
Yeah, I thought the Criterion Collection was on Hulu at one point. I don't know if it still is, but just
there is a Criterion channel that is a bespoke streaming service that has a bunch of movies on.
Okay, gotcha.
I borrow my brother's password.
Hooray!
I sleep in a big bed with my wife. Just bulking up the old movie collection, just because like Blockbuster before it, streaming services don't put a lot of stock in like really nice copies of old movies, or any copies sometimes.
Right. Yeah, I was very happy with my 4K Blu-ray of Super Mario Galaxy.
That movie is a blast.
And I have the original Star Wars trilogy on Blu-ray. And
still waiting for them to do an original cut.
Well, I found out that the PS3 was capable of DTS master audio. And so then I found out some of my Blu-rays support that. And as I've said in the past, my TV doesn't have DTS pass-through. So I'd have to connect a console directly to my receiver, but then I don't get 120 hertz. I only get 60 hertz. But with the PS3, it's like, oh, great, plug that into the receiver and use that to watch Blu-rays that, you know, support that format. Okay. So that's pretty cool. Yeah. Whereas my Series X is what I use to watch stuff in Dolby Atmos. And stupidly enough, the PS5, when I put in a 4K Blu-ray, it outputs in stereo and not
That's an odd choice.
Yeah, and it's not like on PS3 where there's a setting that specifically says, hey, do you want to do Bitstream or PCM or whatever? No, so I cannot get the PS5 to output 4K Blu-rays in Dolby Atmos. It's very weird.
Yeah, I'm sure there must be a way around that, but I just have to look that up.
Yeah, but in the meantime, the Series X does it. So, another fun fact, the PS5 does not support Dolby Vision at all. The Series X can do it for games and streaming, but not for actual physical Blu-ray discs. Very weird. So if you want Dolby Vision on physical discs, you have to get a dedicated 4K Blu-ray player, and the ones that support it can be over $300 or $400. Which is why I don't have them. Yeah.
I would like to point out that it bothers me that in order to play a fucking movie disc on PS5, they've segregated it out so that it goes into the media tab. So if I insert a disc, I actually have to go to the media tab instead of it just popping up like a dedicated disc thing. God damn you, Sony.
Their UI sucks ass.
It's so bad.
On Xbox, you actually have to download the Blu-ray player app.
This is because they don't have to pay a license unless you download it.
Okay.
But that's why they do that.
The things we do for physical media nowadays.
They don't want me to have it.
They don't want us to do it anymore. You're right.
They can suck it because there's a market for it and someone's going to make it.
Yeah. Oh, and I mentioned before, I did get the 4K Blu-ray copy of the Dogma Anniversary Edition, and it's amazing, and I love it. And then I had gotten the Planet Earth 2 and Blue Planet 2 documentaries on 4K Blu-ray during an Amazon sale. Oh, but fucking Amazon, my mom's birthday is next weekend, and her gift has been delayed by a few days.
Fucking Amazon. Oh, no.
Yeah.
Well, hey,
it should arrive Friday, but we'll see.
I'm trying to replace some Xbox games I got rid of because I'm dumb. And 2/3 of them showed up damaged. Well, one was damaged. One was a not new copy in a sealed baggie.
Ooh.
Yikes.
Amazon sucks.
Yes.
Yeah, I was going to say, I got better stuff on eBay.
Yeah, I've become very good at buying from other places, but sometimes I go on there and it's like, ooh, Prime, I can get things quicker, and it's not fucking worth it.
No, but now you need Prime just to get normal shipping speed.
It's still not worth it.
No. Trying to get away from Amazon. And here's the thing. I just ordered some stuff from Best Buy, and it's like, you don't need a membership. It's like, oh, yeah, we'll send it in 2 days. I'm like, okay. Wow. Thanks.
I bought something from Walmart the other day, and it was like, oh, it'll arrive today. I'm like, yeah, okay, whatever. Yeah, it arrived in a few hours.
But that doesn't that mean that somebody who works at your local Walmart had to deliver it on their way home?
I don't know. It's probably not great, but I mean, I
There is no ethical consumption.
Yes.
No, there's not.
You got to do the best you can.
Yeah, and at this point, it's if we can all just get away from Amazon, or at the very least, get rid of that Prime membership. That's where they get most of their money. And and now Prime Video, you have to watch ads. Oh, pay us an extra $5 if you want 4K streaming and no ads. And it's like, well, fuck you. You know, it's already $15 a month. You want another $5? Like, yeah.
Ugh. Remember when streaming services were better than cable and now they're worse?
Yeah. So good news is that just before Prime expired, I watched Project Hail Mary, and I love that movie. And that is something I would gladly buy on 4K Blu-ray if I can find it. Yeah.
Well, I can tell you, everyone here, that you should buy, when it comes out, The Odyssey on 4K Blu-ray. And watch it on the biggest TV you can with massive speakers if you don't get the chance to see it in IMAX. Because it's one of the best movies I've ever seen. And my 13-year-old son, who is unimpressed by most things, said it's his favorite movie of all time. That is the best review I can give it.
Hey, Mikey, I think you liked it.
Have we been ignoring we've been ignoring questions? I feel like we have.
There is one question. I just want to point praise The Odyssey some more, because even some stuff in it that I thought was like CGI was not. It's like almost all practical effects.
Cool.
It's go see that movie.
I saw a very funny I don't know if it was TikTok or YouTube, but a guy dressed as as a soldier.
It was TikTok, because I shared it to the channel earlier.
Okay, yeah, the guy dragging there was somebody hiding inside a Trojan horse. And so at one point he takes a corner, it falls over, the two guys come out, and the security guard is just like, oh, you can't bring that in the theater with you. Like, doesn't register that, oh, they are sneaking in without buying tickets. What an idiot.
They
paid him $10 to play along.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. And so I've been monitoring the Ask Wheels channel. There's no questions, but you do have some spam that you may want to get rid of.
Let them go.
But then I can't help but notice you are playing Ace 4 and not playing Legend of Heroes.
I'm going to be honest with you. I'm not going to change the game anymore if I switch games.
Okay, no problem.
Because I don't care. No one is searching for games and coming across this ever. So it's just a waste of my time.
Yeah, so there are some Fireminer questions on the RP Game Channel. And Mon Cappy said sup an hour ago. So I hope
we shut it up, Mon Cappy.
Yeah, we got most of those questions. Yeah. I think we're just missing the last one here. The Ryza ASMR that Koei released last year was so successful that Capcom apparently published an ASMR special for Ketsu on April Fool's Day. Between this and the Ketsu table lamp, Capcom is really leaning into the joke here, and they should do more so, actually, I think.
Ryza, like, whispering in your ear when you're trying to sleep?
Yeah, like that.
Is that good? Do we like that?
Somebody did.
It is what it is.
Okay. I mean, I'll admit, I have watched some ASMR content with pretty girls, but I don't know that I want an anime character whispering to me in Japanese in her high-pitched, squeaky voice. Like, I don't know.
I will put it this way. It found its audience.
All right. Now, on Wheels, I texted you an offer. I don't know if you saw it, but
text.
What is that?
We are closing in on our established intended end time, so we should just.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That deal.
Did you guys talk about what you've been playing already? Did I miss
that? No, that deal's acceptable.
Okay.
We have an accord.
We did.
We haven't recorded. Okay. Yeah. So Wheels is now being gifted a Steam copy of Street Fighter VI, so that hopefully we can play that again on Shenanigans at some point. And in exchange, I get the copy of Phantom Brave that he was going to sell me for $20. So it works out.
Yeah, that's fair.
Money's exchanged for goods and services.
Play now.
Oh, Homer.
So, okay. All right,
but where can I exchange money for a good known as indie authors and their wonderful work?
Well, sadly, this involves Amazon, because honestly, there's no other decent, viable market to work with this, unfortunately. So at the end of August, we have the last two episodes of Princesses of the Pizza Parlor coming out, both on the same day, just to get it over with. And there will be a sale leading up to that, so feel free to buy everything beforehand. Go ahead. It's not exactly expensive to begin with. But if you want to save just a bit more cash, wait till the end of August for Princesses of the Pizza Parlor by Michael Yarimizu. Yarimizu. Other than that, I mean, had the new one out a week and a half ago, Monsters Among Us Teenage Wasteland by Michael Spearwater, Spearwater. I mean, like, pretty much everything I'm putting out these days, I don't have high hopes for ever selling a lot. At the same time, at least I know that I have potentially screwed over the publisher who just was awful.
Worth it.
Yeah.
Worth it.
Worth it, yes, worth it. I have no idea if they will ever even notice that I have done that, that I've put this thing out, because they... I mean, that... They refuse to acknowledge the notice of contract or of ending of contract termination twice. I'm just like, no. We have you on like multiple contract violations. We have you on just flat out not doing anything for a full year and a half. And this is not getting you anything. Leave it be. It's the summer. I'm just trying to get stuff out and get stuff up and so either under the name Michael Spearwater, M-A-I-K-E-L-S, actually not Michael, why am I getting mixed up at this point? Okay, so Michael Spearwater, Spearwater, or Michael Yarimizu, Michael Yarimizu. There's plenty to read at this point. Plenty. So just go check it out, please. Thank you. Okay.